afternoon, Commissioners. Bob Casey on behalf of staff. Item number one addresses staff's draft petition to the FCC requesting a permanent waiver of a requirement contained in four new FCC rules to provide hard copy lifeline certification forms to eligible telecommunications carriers. The United States Telecom Association filed for and received three consecutive temporary waivers of this requirement on behalf of states, which included Florida, through February 1st, 2014.
Bob, just wait 1 second. Can you all hear?
We can hear him, but it's not on the speaker.
Okay. All right.
I don't know about the folks in the back.
We can ask.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. The current waiver order states that no later than November 1st, 2013, each state still subject to this waiver must file a status update with the FCC, and if a state believes that it will be unable to come into compliance and seeks a permanent waiver from the rules, it must provide, in its request for permanent relief, an explanation for why such relief is appropriate. The Florida Lifeline Electronic Coordinated Enrollment Process does not have the capability of printing out a hard copy Lifeline application, but does allow eligible telecommunication carriers to adhere to the requirements of the Lifeline Reform Order without the need to require or maintain hard copy Lifeline certification applications. Staff believes the FCC requirement to provide hard copy certifications is unnecessary, not cost effective, and would penalize Florida for having an efficient, verifiable, and streamlined Lifeline electronic coordinated enrollment process. Staff is seeking Commission approval to file the status update and permanent waiver request by November 1. Staff is available for questions.
Thank you very much. Before we get into questions, I know that there are several speakers that are interested in this matter, so give them an opportunity to address us if they so wish. Ms. Kazarahi from CenturyLink. Yes, ma'am?
Did you want me to go ahead or were you going to
have to? You can go ahead. Okay, thank you. Greg Follansby from AT&T.
Yes, Greg Follansby from AT&T. If I was at the legislature, I'd say waiver support. But yes, the permanent waiver, we have gone through the trials and tribulations and having to deal with what happens when the temporary waiver ends. It is a catch-up that we prefer to not have to do in the future.
All right, thank you. We have Dee O'Rourke from Verizon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Verizon also supports.
All right, thank you. We have Lisa Steffens from OPC.
We support.
All right. Thank you. All right, Commissioners. Any comments or questions?
I have a question. What is the likelihood of a permanent waiver? And I'm sorry, can you hear me in the back? I'm trying to speak loud. What's the likelihood of having a permanent waiver?
I would be hesitant to predict what the FCC would do. But in phone conversations with their staff, they are treating this like an administrative thing. Because they know the Florida process better than any other state, they said just file a permanent waiver and they'll take care of it.
And you have been in contact with the FCC continuously, so
there's... For a year and a half.
Can I make a suggestion on the proposed recommendation order on page 6?
Okay.
It's the introduction and summary, and I think right at the top, that paragraph, that's not in full, but it's right at the top where it says the Florida Lifeline electronic coordinated enrollment process does not have the capability of printing out a hard copy Lifeline application as required. I think it would be helpful. You have some great language throughout towards the latter part of the recommendation. If you summarize why. So they have that in the intro and the summary. It just says that we don't have the capabilities. But if you just provide, there's, I think on page 17, it says, three-quarters of the way down, it says it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to isolate that area, that paragraph there. You've got some good language there that maybe you want to incorporate there that
sure.
Summarizes.
Be glad to.
Thanks for your work on it.
Anything else, Commissioners, on this item? Okay, if not, we're ready to entertain a vote.
I think that's a good suggestion. Thank you, Commissioner Brown. I think this is all good, good staff work, and I move that we approve it and ask our staff to do whatever they need to follow through.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Further comments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much, staff. Thank you very much for your work on this.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Moving on to item number two, which is review of the 10-year site plan.
2013. Thank you.
Draft review of the 2013 10-year site plan to the Florida Electric Utilities. Overall, the report is similar in format and content to last year's review. We broke it into three sections, a statewide review, a utility-specific review, and then a collection of comments we received. In this, we also have a oral modification to several components just handed out. Would you like me to go over each item?
No, you could, if we have questions about them, we'll address them.
Overall, they're just minor corrections and clarifications. For the statewide review, staff noticed three trends. A decline in retail energy sales. As of last year, compared to the previous 10 years, sales have only increased 0.6% from 2003 levels. A total customer growth of 11% during that period. A second trend we noticed was EPA rules having an impact. Overall, these rules are still in a proposed stage or being addressed in courts, but overall their impact will be to increase the cost of coal-fired generation as well as increase the likelihood of retirements, which leads to the third trend, which is a higher natural gas usage. We hit a record of about 64% natural gas being fuel for electricity last year. Partly that was due to the uprates of some of FPL's units and those units being offline during that period of time. We expect it to come back down to approximately 60%, but stay at that level for most of the rest of the period. For the utility-specific section, the main one we looked at was Duke, which is going to be relying heavily on purchase power agreements, especially in 2016 and 2017, due to some coal retirements potentially related to EPA rules. It looks to be sufficient capacity within the state for reserve market purposes, and the company is already pursuing RFPs for capacity within and outside of the state. For comments, we had, I believe, one group suggest FPL's 10-year site plan was unsuitable. It was Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council. Their concerns were associated with FPL's high dependence on natural gas and a lack of renewables and energy efficiency. We also had comments from Sierra Club, Earth Justice, and SACE. We also have additional comments that were not included in the initial draft, about 160 pages, and we would ask for authority to add those comments to the Appendix A for forwarding to the Department of Environmental Protection and Department of Agriculture.
All right, thank you very much. Before we go to questions, I think we have Diana Shank from the Sierra Club that sought to speak. Okay, she's not here. So, Commissioners, the floor is open for questions or comments.
Comment.
Sure. Commissioner Alice.
Thank you. On page two, figure one, we talked about this in our briefing, but they have an interesting graphic that shows that the gap is spreading between number of customers and retail energy sales. What do you attribute that to?
It's a combination of factors. It's energy efficiency, partly the decline in energy sales is probably associated with the recession, but you have increased appliance standards, increased building codes, a variety of conservation efforts, and things of that manner are generally decreasing the per capita usage. So that's probably one of the major associations.
Okay, and then as far as the number of customers, that has increased, and how does that reflect on the individual customer classes, residential, commercial, and industrial?
Compared to 10 years ago, I believe industrial is still slightly negative and will probably remain negative throughout the period compared to 2003. I believe residential and commercial have recovered from their decline. Overall, those rates are expected to increase throughout the period.
Okay, and as compared to last year, do you have data on that?
I believe the growth was approximately 0.8% across all groups. I don't have that broken down by individual group, though.
Okay. That's all I have.
All right. Any further questions or comments? Commissioner Brown.
I have a question on page 31, the reserve margin. Figure 11, the summer, the summer reserve margin. In 2020 and 2021, without the demand response, it goes beneath the 15%. Can you explain how it dips and how it fluctuates over that 10-year period, highlighting those 2 years?
Overall, during this entire period, all of them are assuming the addition of incremental conservation, which goes into the baseline, which affects both the without demand response portion and with demand response portion. As customer load increases, assuming no changes to generation capacity, reserve margin will decrease. This includes all the units that are anticipating adding in the 10-year site plans. So the decline further on is mostly due to the final impacts of any and all retirements of units, as well as additions as they go through. For those 2 years, I can't recall any specific reason why that would drop as low compared to the others. I do know about 2022, the main unit being added that year is Turkey Point 6.
And this is the 11, this includes the 11 utilities that filed the 10-year site plan. That's
This is actually the state of Florida as a whole. Okay. So it's all Florida utilities, including not just the 10-year site plan utilities, but others that are included from the FRCC data.
Okay, thank you. And then I want to talk about the electric vehicles section. You have a summary section, I think, on page 13. And this, not to go back, but I just want to look at that for a second, how they measure growth in this chart. It goes from the current, in 2013, the current is 0.025, and then in 2022, it jumps to 2%. And I'm just curious how you measure that growth in the chart, those estimates.
With the electric vehicles, I believe it was just on various forecasts of, I'm trying to recall specifically. Could you ask the question? I think I got myself confused.
Well, the estimated number of plug-ins here, the plug-in EVs by service story, I was curious how they measured it in terms of the estimated growth by this chart. Acknowledging the fact that currently in 2013, the percentage is 0.025% and then it jumps to 2%. And I know that these are estimates, but I'm curious how they actually measure it.
I think each individual utility had a different method of calculating. We asked the individual utilities what their estimate within their story would be. They relied upon a variety of different industry reports. And they usually took a statewide or a national model and then looked at their portion of that to determine the estimate of growth. Some of them were more optimistic than others, and in some of the scenarios, we did them were more optimistic than others.
But even that jump to 2%, that doesn't have a tremendous impact on the overall grid.
No. There's a relative...
Wow. Sorry.
There's a relatively small impact. But it is something we noted and we're keeping track of. It probably will have a greater impact on the distribution system if there are several electric vehicles added to a single street. Street, it could have distribution impacts there, but I don't believe we're looking at any major impacts on the grid as a whole at this point.
Thank you. Thanks for your work on it.
Any further questions? Commissioner Bowles.
Yeah, and a follow-up on Commissioner Brown's comment on Figure 11. How do the utilities forecast additional demand-side management programs that we're going through the goal-setting process next year?
At this point, there are currently FICA goals established through 2019, and for the last 2 years, most of the utilities, I believe, they just assumed the continuation of existing plans. Not all of the utilities that are under this are under FICA. Several are municipal utilities that we do not cover, so they have their own energy efficiency and demand response plans. I know some of them have. I believe the city of Tallahassee has a summer-only one, but not a winter demand response program, things of that nature that aren't covered under FICA.
Okay. And then last question on Table 12 on page 30. And I don't know if I missed this last year, but does Mr. Kelly have a plant named after him? J.R. Kelly plant? Is that the same?
J.R. Kelly. Ain't me. It's definitely not a fine.
I believe
that's
actually a historic figure associated with Gainesville.
Okay.
I will admit to not knowing.
Okay. Just curious. Go ahead.
Any further questions or comments? All right. If not, we are over sponsored to entertain a motion.
I move that we forward this along to DEB and consider these plans as suitable.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. So now we move to item number 3, which is our legislative update.
Off between committee meetings. The next set of committee meetings will be the week of November 4th. We really haven't heard yet what the committees may be doing at that time. I will tell you that the bills are starting to come in. One thing that, you know, we've seen a couple that were filed last year, the bills relating to fracturing have been filed again. The only one I wanted to bring to your attention today, and we have a bill analysis request has been made of us, and that's Senate Bill 272 by Senator Simpson. It's a water and wastewater bill. There are some similarities in that bill and the bill that Senator Hayes filed last year. Senator Simpson's bill seems to focus on two areas. The first one, which is not one of the study committee recommendations, and to my memory was not discussed, is that It would basically say that the rates of an investor-owned water and wastewater utility could not be higher than the rates of the government-owned or municipal utility that, if there is one located in the same county. It further basically says that the commission must adjust those rates to no more than the municipal or government-owned water or wastewater utility back to the rates at the last rate hearing, and that the utility must refund all monies within 12 months. So that was not part of the recommendations of the study committee. He does seem to have picked up the secondary water standard language that was part of the study committee's recommendations, that the commission would take that into account using information from the Department of Environmental Regulation, water management districts, local governments, consumer complaints, etc., that they would use that same information into considering secondary water standards. We've not finished our analysis yet. We should have a draft by tomorrow. And other than that, we're just responding to a lot of inquiries and requests and getting ready for meetings again.
All right. Thank you. Questions? Commissioner Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Senator Simpson's bill, does it say anything, or included anything as far as property tax and taxable value? Because municipals don't have to pay property tax.
It does not.
Okay. And you said that staff is in the process of making sure that we put together an analysis.
Yes, sir. We're working on an analysis now.
Okay. Go ahead.
Commissioner Edgar.
Thank you. Just a calendar question. Kevin, if you know, and if not, that's okay. After the week of November 4th, how many more or the dates do they have scheduled for committee meetings prior to the end of the year?
Let me not misspeak, and I will send
okay,
that to you.
Thank you.
All of us. Yeah, I will. Absolutely. I just don't want to misspeak. I think I could tell you, but I don't want to be sure. The other thing I did want to mention that is that Commissioner Brown did a great job in front of the Senate.
No, I didn't.
Communications and Energy and Public Facilities Committee a couple weeks ago.
Thank you.
They I don't know what they're going to do with the information yet, but she did. Yes, you did.
I spoke faster than Speedy Gonzales. Thank you for your help.
And we are, Senator Hayes is still intending to file the bill that he filed last year regarding the recommendations of the Water and Wastewater Study Committee.
All right. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Executive Director, Mr. Bynum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two items, one brief one, just following up on the legislative update. We're presenting our LBR and our Schedule AB budget before the House Subcommittee on November 6th, I believe. It's short time. Short time slot. I believe it's in the afternoon for those of you that are interested. That's November 6th. And my final item is a bittersweet one. As many of you may know, Ann Cole, our commission clerk, is leaving us November 14th. Is her last day. And she has had probably in the relatively short time that she's been there, she joined the commission in 07, I believe. In that relatively short time that she's been here, she's had as much to do with this agency being dragged, kicking and screaming into the late 20th century as anyone in the building, and we're going to miss her. That's the bitter part. The sweet part is that I'd like to propose her successor. Many of you know Carlotta Stauffer. She's been working with Ann these last several months and actually had occasion to work with her for a long time at DOLA, which is where they both originated. So she's had a good opportunity to learn Ann's brain and to understand her vision and her way of doing things and the good things that she's done for us as well. I'd like to nominate her or appoint her as the next commission clerk. I can think of nobody better to take Ann's place, in part not just because of their experience together, but because, you know, Carlotta and I worked together for some time, and I think she has, as much as anyone, a terrific understanding both of the steps that Ann has put into place and the efforts that Ann has started us off on is for the long term. And also, Carlotta understands as well as anyone what we are trying to, what executive management has been trying to do along those lines. So if there's anyone better to bring all of these good things in for a landing and to a successful completion, I can't think of one. So with your consent, I would like to name Carlotta Stauffer as our next commission clerk.
All right. Thank you. Any comments, commissioners?
Great choice.
All right. Can't recall. Does this require a vote? I don't believe
a so. Simple nod would.
Yes. Good choice. And we're going to miss you. You and I have gotten really close, being so close together.
I know.
going to miss you a lot. And Carl, I'm looking forward to working with you. And best wishes to you and your future endeavors.
All right.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Excellent choice. And
I think so, too.
We will stack up some more work before the 14th. But in all seriousness, we definitely want to thank you for your service to the commission. And Carlotta, we expect great things from you moving forward as well. All right, anything else from you?
Nothing else today.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman.
Other matters, is there anything else? Anything on other matters today? Okay. Seeing none. All right, with that, Commissioner Graham, move your rise.